It's 4:31. You're listening to Katie and Kay's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm Kathleen Shannon, your host for today, because we've turned the tables and are interviewing the show's creator and host, Bill Kite. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you.
How does it feel to be on the other end of an interview?
Well, it's fun no matter where you are in the chair, either as the engineer or the person in doing the program or the interviewee or the interviewer. So I always have fun no matter what.
Right. That's a good setup for a conversation. So tell us when you first started for Land's Sake and why.
It was back in, it'll be 5 years this April, I believe, 5 years from April 2021. And I did it primarily because I had a lot of experience in land management, 38 years experience in the BLM and Forest Service, and I wanted to share some of that experience in terms of trying to let people know what's happening on their public lands. I think around here, people really do love their public lands, but they're not always conscious of what's going on politically or are authors writing about our favorite piece of earth. And so I wanted to kind of stay fresh and be able to present to people things they might not know or they might want to know about. For instance, the wolf situation. It's going to be on the ballot this fall, and mm-hmm. I had both D. Malone one program and I had Bill Fales the other. And so I like to give both sides if I can. If not, some people aren't willing to tell their side. We only let the people that are against the mine, the open pit mine in Glenwood, give their side, because there's only one side on that particular issue, I think. So, yeah, it's just been a lot of fun. You know, I can remember a lot of different folks that were on the show, and the secret is always to make them feel welcome and that you're just a friend wanting them to tell their story. And
yeah.
So that's the way I look at it, and how could you not have fun? I know a lot of the people, it's over when they go, is it already done, you know, when we're done, because they're having fun. So that's the goal, really, to educate and to have fun.
Great. And I'm sure the listeners are, too. And you mentioned a couple people you've spoken to over the years. Who else has been on the show?
Well, I've had author Peter Heller a couple of times when he did The River. Had him talk about that book. And then The Orchard, which is a smaller book that hasn't been published yet. You can only get it on audio programs. And it was really great because as a writer myself, Peter shared how he writes and some of the things about his life. And he's a great storyteller too. So I really, any chance I get to have him on, I want to do that. My favorite author and writer and pontificator, I'm not going to get his John Fahey. He's going to, if he's listening, he's probably, God, can't you remember my name? John. So, because he's a really good writer, too, and a very prolific writer. And the best advice he gave was actually that no matter what you're doing, if it hits you to write something down, even if you're making love, stop and go write it down. And so I thought that was, of all the things said on the show, that was really the funniest, but most poignant, too, at the same time, and very, very real, in a very real way. I've had rangers from the Forest Service that our rangers here in the Aspen Soperus District on what's going on to let people know. Had Scott Fitzwilliams at the very start of For Land's Sake, the forest supervisor, telling us things that are going on. So that's always been my goal, is to make sure that current events that are current are talked about or have somebody that knows what they're talking about. I had also High Country News folks have been on a few times. That's one of my favorite magazines of the West, keeping us informed what we really need to know that we wouldn't probably otherwise. So those are a few of the different programs we've had. I was really glad I had Fred Heberlin on, because he's passed away now. It's been over a year, going on 2 years. He was on, as Mary Noon was, on how they, as artists, portray the land, and that was a really good program. There hasn't been a bad program that I can think of, and I've just been thankful for this opportunity with Katie and Kay to have the radio show.
Yeah, and we're so glad to have you over all this time, too. So let's talk about public lands, since so much of your work has been around that. What kind of a future do you think public lands have at the moment?
I don't think that there is a future in public lands at all unless people really wake up and start trying their best to protect them in their own way. And in trying to realize what's at stake, especially under this administration, which is trying to roll back laws that were built with a consensus of politicians over a long period of time, the Clean Air, Clean Water Act. And it just it can so easily happen that we lose our access to public lands, even lose public lands with a lot of people wanting to privatize them, that people really need to know and need to take an activist stand. And right now, I think more than anything, that's very important in this time that we're living in, because we only have one life, and how are we going to use it? Are we going to try to help protect public lands, or are we going to just take what comes to us and then be surprised when all of a sudden the public lands aren't there anymore? So I'm optimistic, but I'm also a realist, and I really feel unless people take to heart the public lands issues that come up and the bills that are before Congress that they could support, then I don't know what's really going to happen.
It's an important time of year to really be looking into those issues, for sure. So thinking more about just your time in the studio, it's looked dramatically different over the last 6 months. So how have you dealt with the pandemic and being unable to have guests in the studio?
Well, it's been interesting. I don't like it because I like the one-on-one with people, even if they're on the phone and I'm sitting here at the console. It's just, I feel a connection there. And when you're trying to tape and then you're trying to get it to the studio and to the station. I screwed up on one here recently, and I've got to tell Alia Hall that I apologize for that, but the recording was not that good. And so that's part of the problem is you've got to have really good recording equipment. And I thought I'd purchased something from an application, and it turned out not to be what I needed and didn't record very well. So it's been real challenging. And although people are willing to be interviewed, it's just not the same. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. The in-person interview in studio is really ideal. And I'll just take a moment to remind listeners, you're listening to Katie and Kay's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake, where we've turned the tables to hear from show host Bill Kite. And a few more questions for you.
Okay.
So on this show, I know you're definitely connecting, kind of channeling the sacredness of the land. So on that note, why should we be concerned about what happens to our planet Earth?
Well, it's the only home we have. I think a lot of people are way out there in left field who think we're going to colonize the moon or Mars or other places. The amount of resource it would take, extractive resources, to accomplish that, I think, is a pipe dream myself. That's why I feel we really need to take care of Mother Earth in a sacred manner, like the Native people that I know personally that care enough to be actively involved in trying to protect their homeland. And their homeland is where we live. And I am also part of trying to educate different nonprofits about that fact that a lot of people, there's a sort of a fad going around that's not a bad fad, but I think it's just a fad if you're not familiar with acknowledging the land and who it belonged to before. If it just becomes a thing you do before you give a speech or before you enter into a project to help Mother Earth, I think you need to go deeper than that and be familiar with the Ute Indians that lived here and how they lived and how important to know their history and how the land was really taken from them. Those are things that connect them and can reconnect us to the first inhabitants, the first indigenous people, the Ute people in Colorado. So it's very important to me to acknowledge and recognize that sacredness of the land and try to be sure that you're really educated about the history of the land and who had it before and how they took care of it or not, and how that the different groups of people that have come through, including the settlers and the colonization of Colorado, because it was a colonization. All those things are important to know in history, and that's part of why I care about history and I'm passionate about it. And then you also establish relationships with Native peoples that are very rewarding because there's a lot of knowledge there that I know in my own life. To have been a friend of Clifford Duncan and other people that have passed on has been nothing but a great reward in my life, and their connection to the land and being out there with them on the flat tops and in the wilderness and have them do a ceremony with sweetgrass to welcome the sun up and hand it over to me and let me do the blessing too. Is those are the kind of things that are very important to me and making sure that other people are aware of what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think with the official Indigenous Peoples Day right behind us, it's important to remember that that's not just one day a year. It doesn't need to be just one day. Moving back towards public land, how do you think people in general feel about public lands and how much do they care?
Well, that's a question that would take a lot of time to thoroughly answer, because I think although we have a lot more people recreating on public lands, I'm not sure a lot of those people have the land ethic that they need and how they treat the land. Building new bike paths in places that don't have bike paths before without going through the actual review process with the public land administrator. I've seen people leave campgrounds that just don't know how to leave no trace, which is something that all of us who care about the land are very careful about doing. So I think one thing, there's a very different mindset in what I call industrial tourism. And it's hard to define what industrial tourism is, but I know what it is when I see it, I guess is how I would put it. And when you you turn people loose on the land without an understanding, who think they can go out with a GPS and they're okay, I don't know how to read a map and don't know the different land statuses, BLM, public, state, private land. How can you really enjoy those gifts the Creator gave us unless you really are tied into what's going on the land and you're present with the land? You're not just a visitor taking advantage of and driving wherever the heck you want to go. And industrial tourism ways, maybe the way you're enjoying the land. But if you're going to do that, I think there's a certain amount of respect that you need before you just go out there and just start recreating, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Did that answer?
Yeah. And I think I agree. There's a lot of language we use when we go out and recreate that is maybe a little more aggressive than, you know, if you're going to go crush a ride or something on your mountain bike. It's got a sort of different feeling to it, I think, than a different approach. On that note too, what do you think are the current threats to public lands and what can people do about them?
Again, I think the privatization group that really wants to just turn the lands over to private interest is probably the most dangerous. There are people such as Teddy Roosevelt who, though was an aristocrat, knew what it was by going into the Dakotas like he did after his wife and his mother died on the very same day, and lived among people and learned how to really eke a living out of the land. I think produced a spirit in him that caused him to set aside, I think it was 240 million acres of public land, and a lot of the Forest Service set aside were as a result of him doing that by presidential proclamation and getting things passed through Congress as well. And I think that if you don't know about those things, and then how are you going to be aware that a threat is coming? And I think there's a lot of, especially in Utah, a place I really love to go and visit and recreate in myself, that has people that's their intent is to privatize public land. So that would be, I think, the number one threat that I see. And the other threat is what I would call improper use. For instance, the caching of objects for a while. I don't know if that's still a fad, but that was a lot of times revealing where places are to bring other people in there when, in some instances, the cave that people were bringing people to didn't have a lot of visitors before. It brought a lot of influx in people and stashing stuff all over the forest or public lands and having people just come and assault the public land because you're playing some kind of game. It just doesn't fit right with me, you know. And so I think people that go out there and don't, you know, properly take care of the land are what I would consider my second biggest threat that I see on the horizon, and it's happening right now. Places I've been to before are just overrun with people. To the extent, if you take, you know, the wilderness areas close to us here, the Maroon Bells is a good example where the Forest Service had to limit use by a permit system, and sometimes places have to be shut down. You know, there were just absolute way too many. One, you know, person putting their human waste improperly on the land is enough, but there were so many pounds of human waste that were gathered by rangers one year before at Conundrum Spring is a good example of people just overusing an area. When I see that happening, I just step back and quit using it and try to some way educate people about the damage they're causing. I think social media has contributed to that a lot. Mm-hmm. Instead of helping, I think, you know, it's also, fortunately, to show that people do care out there that are listening. Hanging Lake, people walking on the log when they weren't supposed to, posting on social media and having people then say, well, yeah, I know who that was. Or snowmobiling in the wilderness when, you know, that's not what you do in the wilderness. And you had people that say, yeah, I know who that was. That's, I think, encouraging to me because why should other people not adhere to the rules that we adhere to protect the place? So those are two. I think the administration, you know, in its efforts to, like I just said earlier, do away with those laws that bipartisan were passed through bipartisan efforts, and because the public wanted those lands protected, is a crime as far as I'm concerned. It's criminal what's happening to try to take some of the really good laws that were passed to protect our environment and Mother Earth. To lessen those and to do away with them is we see this slowly happening piecemeal by piecemeal while other drama is going on with administration that I think is so easy to get done with us not even noticing if we're not paying attention. So those would be the top three as far as I'm concerned.
All right, so I think we've gathered quite a bit about the spirit of the show and why you've brought it to be. You've heard a little bit about who you've had on as guests. So what are your plans for future episodes of The Landsake?
Well, I'd like to get Senator Bennett on about the CORE Act that's before Congress that hasn't been passed yet. I don't believe it's been passed, has it? Have you heard any news about it?
I can get back to you on that.
Okay, yeah, because I think that's very important, you know, over... There's a lot of land that could be set aside over 400,000 acres of public land in Colorado with new wilderness areas and protecting the Thompson Divide as included in that act. And so we'll see how with this new Senate coming in, with the new president coming in, possibly at least hopefully, then I think we can. I'd like to dig more into that. And, of course, find I'd like for people to let me know if folks they would like to have on the show, especially again authors, storytellers who talk about the land, anything that's related to the land. I really like to talk about and have people on that know what they're talking about. And then I also have a other side of me that's a historian that's involved in telling history in a storyteller way with a ghost walk. So I'll throw in a plug for the ghost walk we put on every year. This year it'll be a virtual ghost walk on October 22nd at 7:00. And if you go to our website, glenwoodhistory.com, in the next few days it will show how you can access that. And it will be a live streaming time. We're going to have a lot of fun with that, and it's one of our main fundraisers. So that's other time I devote myself to, and doing also videos for the Post Independent on history, 2 to 3 minute videos. I do those, and then my column, It's About Time. So I try to stay busy and getting things done, and not only just doing the show, but also trying to educate people about history and about land. So those are the two really important things to me.
Great. And as you mentioned, you're a writer yourself, and you often have writers on your show. How does talking to other writers about land, how would you say that influences your own writing practice?
Well, they give you clues to do things better. I think right now I've been doing these scripts, like I'll be doing for the Ghost Walk here in a few days, and I like doing that. But it's kind of formula in a way. I mean, you know what you want to say and you know how to say it. I think more than anything else, it helps me with my storytelling, because you do have to write a script for what story you're going to tell before you can tell it. And I get these clues. I always ask the writers, what advice would you like to give to upcoming writers? And they always come up. I can't right now think of too many of those. But Peter Heller talked about how he wrote, and the fact that when I asked him about The Orchard, how he had written in a woman's voice, you know, how he chose to do that. He said, well, I didn't really choose. It just sort of came to me. And I think that one thing that's most important from the writers I've interviewed is you've got to be open and adaptable to being able to tell the story, let the story tell itself, you know, let the novel write itself, let whatever you're doing influence what you're doing, so that your ego is not in there, so that the story can come through the ego. So little tips like that are, I find, when I'm sitting down to write, I think about them. Right now I'm not thinking about writing, but they're there in my notes. I have a lot of notes I keep on writing, and then I have a number of journals I keep. And for those people that want to write, that's what you do. A writer just writes. You don't have to do it for anybody else. You can just write in your journal. It really helps, I think, to put things down and know for sure then that, you know, hey, I'm doing what I should be doing. I'm exercising my writing skills here. And if it's only for myself, that's a good thing.
All right. Well, thanks, Bill, for letting me turn around the tables and ask you some great questions. It's been fun.
All right. Thanks much. It was fun for sure. And people, don't forget next month, second Tuesday of the month, to tune in at 4:30, same time, same place. In the meantime, whatever you do for Mother Earth, do it for land's sake.